We've talked today about some successes in the Alternative Pathways to Teaching program. Savannah's teacher, Stephen Ruth, is one example of that. Now let's take a sort of broader look at that program and that philosophy with Maureen Downey. She's an education reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and author of the paper's Get Schooled blog. Good to have you, Grand Maureen.
Good morning.
So let's talk about how common this kind of program is, an Alternative Pathways to Teaching. Is that seen all across the nation?
It's seen all across the nation, and probably the best data that we have on those programs comes out of a study in North Carolina of how its teachers were getting to the classroom, and about 15% of their teachers came through some kind of alternative pathway.
So what data do we have? We just heard from Heather Bilton of the Savannah program, at least, who says they're just as these teachers are just as successful as any other teachers. Can we back that up with research?
Well, the Savannah program, obviously, I listened to them describe it, is clearly a very tailored, detailed program, and it's bound to be successful with that level of attention. You know, I would say what we know so far about alternative track programs to the classroom, it's not as promising. In North Carolina, for example, found that those teachers were not as effective in the classroom, particularly in the high school level where content is critical. Those teachers were not as successful based on student performance as teachers coming out of Carolina teacher prep programs. The National Council on Teacher Quality does a big assessment of all the teacher prep programs and has expanded that to alternative programs. And they found, in fact, that those programs were doing a worse job getting teachers ready for the classroom than traditional programs in general. So I think at this point, and again, we don't have a lot of studies, so the University of North Carolina study and the National Council on Teacher Quality study are just two that we have.
So I want to read you a few tweets, which is reactions from our listeners to this conversation. First, we have Carrie Howell, who says, I dreamed of being a math teacher once. Now I'm an auto tech. I love the concept of bringing real life experience to classrooms. But then we have others like Cass Mudd, who says, patchwork solutions to structural problems. As long as education remains low priority, U.S. remains dependent upon foreign talent. How credible is that particular complaint, that really this is a Band-Aid on what's a larger problem?
Well, you know, one thing we have to be clear on is that while we have a teacher shortage in Georgia and nationwide, it is not across every area. In fact, we are overproducing the elementary school teachers nationwide. The shortage now is the shortage that existed in 2000, and that is the math, science, and special education and language teachers. So that's where our shortage is. And in fact, when you see them bringing teachers in from abroad, they're often math and science at the high school level. So in fact, we do have that problem. And I do agree that that is a bigger problem. And frankly, alternative tracking to teachers will not solve that. What North Carolina found is that it's mythical that people who are high performers, that we all talk about this, the rocket scientist who becomes the math teacher, that was very uncommon. Folks in high-paying fields like that don't leave. What they found in North Carolina is the career switchers, the folks coming mid-career, were actually slightly younger than what people thought, late 20s, 30s, and it wasn't working out. They were the sort of frustrated fashion designers who were switching to education. So the alternative track does not seem to be a way to solve the math science problem, because as you alluded, an engineer making $125,000 or $200,000 a year who has wonderful working conditions, can duck out at 10 o'clock for a latte at Starbucks, is not going to necessarily make a transition to an under pressure, high poverty school. And those are the schools that have the toughest time, you know, filling those teacher slots, where they can't leave the classroom and there's lukewarm coffee, if there's any coffee. So that's what we have to keep in mind. We have to be realistic about what the problem is.
And, you know, to that point, we got this other tweet from Chester Loy, who says, how is teaching in Savannah schools rewarding when all you do is teach for the GMAS test? Way too much paperwork and not enough teaching. And to what extent are these teachers cowed and depressed by the exact same complaints we hear from teachers who have ed degrees. Aren't they also going to be dealing with low pay, lots and lots of testing, and very few resources?
You know, I think when the teacher, regardless of what kind of program you come from, but let's focus on the alternative track, those teachers, according to the research, are the least prepared for the management that comes with teaching. So I think, in fact, they're probably aware of the low pay. I mean, some facts they know going in about teaching. What they don't know is how difficult it is to manage a classroom, and they don't really know the level of support. Teach for America usually fares very well when alternative teacher programs are evaluated. And the one thing that is cited over and over again is the ongoing support that Teach for America gives its teachers it places in public schools in America. So that is something that I think that we should be mimicking. I mean, all these alternative track programs need to have ongoing support, because the teachers coming in who don't go through the teacher prep have the least sort of training in what, you know, the big word pedagogy, but they just don't know how to manage classrooms. And, you know, yesterday I sat down with a French researcher who's over in Atlanta here studying American school reforms. And what's interesting is that she told me that in France the problem is content. They hire teachers who know content. So folks come in, but they don't know how to teach and manage. So they are trying now classes they used to think were sort of silly, the whole idea of management, that's becoming more important in France. So I think that we have to keep that in mind, too, that there's something to be said for teacher prep programs, the formal, traditional ones, that actually teach you teacher management. And then it is critical, no matter where the new teacher comes from, that there's lots of support in place in terms of the administration, in terms of mentoring, in terms of just sort of SWAT teams that can come in and help a teacher who really is struggling. And that's what we don't have. That's what we lack.
But here's the thing, Maureen, and you can hopefully clear this up for me, because I'm confused at how it's different bringing these people in who do not have ed degrees, as opposed to just fixing the problems that are turning our teachers away. For example, we got this tweet from Carrie Howell, who says, "I'm carrying $30,000 in student debt. I ended up in a manual labor field." So, you know, as we mentioned, pay versus debt is a huge problem. That could probably be solved even for incoming teachers, right? Couldn't we solve the testing program even for teachers who have an ed degree?
You know, I think that your question, which is really the big question, which is how to make teaching a more attractive profession so that the kids who are at the very top of their class are the ones who are drawn to teaching. Once we get those teachers in the door, how do we keep them? So
yeah.
That's an hour-long discussion, but certainly money is a factor.
Yeah, 5 minutes, Maureen.
Right. Okay. Let me just say this then. Train them better. Keep them, increase the training that they have before they go into the classroom. Let them work under a mentor for at least a full year. Once they're in the classroom, assign them a mentor, reward them accordingly, and improve teaching conditions, and make the accord respect to the profession. Now, that said, that is a process that involves multiple institutions in this country, starting with high schools, the colleges, the districts, the state, the federal government, and I don't want to cite Finland, you know, too much, because people hate to hear about Finland, but they improve their schools by improving teacher quality. So being a teacher, getting into teacher prep in Finland is tougher than getting into their med and law schools. And that, we are a long way from that. We still have a lot of kids who have subpar grade point averages in college going into teaching. Not all of them. There's many smart people in teaching, but teaching is still seen, education majors are still seen as less than compared to math or science or engineering or law or finance. And that we have to change, and that's a big challenge.
Okay, so if this is an hour-long conversation when we only have 4 minutes left, is there any proof? Do we have evidence that what you learn when you're going through an education degree makes you better prepared? And by that, I mean, we hear a lot about life experience. People who are older coming back, having worked in an actual garage, maybe if they're teaching shop in high school. People who've been working in a computer corporation, maybe if they're going to teach technology. Does that life experience make you a better teacher?
I would say that life experience gives you more experiences, but whether or not those experiences are relevant to the classroom, for example, the two things that you named, the garage and the computer company, you have a class of 33 kids. Half of them are below grade average. You know, some of them are living homeless shelters. Some of them have parents with drug or alcohol problems. Nothing that you told me there necessarily makes them able to teach those kids to sort of cope in that situation. I think teaching, and particularly in a high poverty school, is an incredibly stressful life. So I'm not sure those experiences, real life experiences, necessarily lend themselves to that. Nor do I think that, you know, necessarily a 4-year undergraduate degree does. But at least there, I think there are you're working with other educators. You're talking about these issues all the time, so you're not surprised by them. But again, I think once these teachers get to the classroom, whether they come the alternative route or they come through UGA or Georgia State, they have got to have a lot of supports in place and to keep them there. I mean, we're losing teachers, but what's interesting is, of course, that the tougher schools lose teachers more. I mean, so we have to recognize the fact that, you know, these classroom conditions play a role. I mean, there are teachers, some of the folks you described could easily go probably into high-achieving schools and do fine because there are minimal problems. The kids bring less baggage. Those same people may not fare well in a tough school where the poverty follows the kids. So, the low-income schools, 21% of teachers leave their schools each year nationwide compared to 14% wow. in low-poverty schools. Wow. So that's the difference.
In the minute and a half that we have, or minute that we have left, Maureen, why then does this myth persist where you hear people saying, well, I could teach better than these other teachers? Why do people think they can do that job better?
And it's interesting because you and I would not go to the dentist and say, I could fill that cavity, you know, better than my dentist, or, you know, I could actually do that brain surgery better. I think because everyone was a student and they saw teachers for 20 years of their lives as they went to college. So I think that people are familiar with what teachers do, and so they've sat in classrooms and thought, I can do this better. But of course, what none of us understand is that it's that the 33 kids or the 30 kids or the 25 kids, it is really a challenge to teach across different abilities.
Yeah.
I think that we think about ourselves as a student, but not think about all the classmates around us. In fact, and we didn't know the extent of those kids'
right.
problems. I mean, we have no idea what our teachers dealt with beyond us.
That's right. That's Maureen Downey. She's education reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, writer of the Get Schooled blog. As always, thank you, Maureen.
Thank you.